I'll let you know. I just want to get it.
Okay. Hello. Now, who's not here?
Chris.
I'm not here.
Well,
Christina. Where's Chris?
Christina's doing the play.
Right. She told me that. And Kirsten, you were going to be...
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow, not today. Okay, gotcha. All right. So, I need everybody to take two of these. And somebody want to take two for Christina and two
Laura?
For Chris?
I'll take two for Chris.
Okay. Anybody two for Christina? Okay, good. And then everybody take one of these and pass those around. And somebody take one for Christina, one for Chris?
Got it.
Okay. Then there are two people presenting child patients eventually. Am I right about that?
I am.
For
okay,
CCE?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Right? Is it really good?
Are you two? Anyone else?
Christina, maybe?
What?
But she's CBT.
Doing
yeah,
what?
She is taking a child.
Okay, a child, not an adolescent child.
Oh, yeah. You were talking orientation to CBT.
No, just whether it's child or adult. Child. Christina, child, Laura, child, and Chris is also
Chris
child.
Is child, yeah.
All right, so that's four. Okay, so you two also well, you actually have, and Chris has, so it's just Alan. And who's the fourth person?
Well, we have the last person.
Do I need a second one for Chris?
No, he has.
Alan, Christina,
okay, so Christine, you want to take this for Christine?
Yeah, well, but I took. Wait, what is that? This is a child. Yeah, a child. I have 90 seconds.
Can you get through it all?
No.
What was that?
It all be explained in a professional.
Okay, now today I'm going to be talking about how to do a Q-sort, what you're going to yield from it, and what I just handed out to you. So the first step is to construct your Q-sort. And we have a veteran. We actually have two veterans in our midst. Actually, you don't need to. Or let you. Did you save yours? Or?
Actually, I have them somewhere. But they're very, like, raggedy.
So raggedy, okay. We don't want raggedy Q-sorts. That's
so
the last thing we want.
Okay.
All right, very good. So what I need you to do is, you're going to take, were there any left? Or was that? Okay. So what I need you to do is, I need you to take what I just handed out, everybody, and you're going to cut out each of the 100 items with scissors. Okay? And you're going to buy, the department wouldn't give me a budget to buy these for you, so you have to go out and you get large index cards from any CVS, Duane Reade, whatever, stationery store. Get the large index cards and tape or paste these items onto each index card.
I think we're in Dead Poets Society. We've been asked to cut out parts of the
oh, Captain, my Captain.
Seize the day. So you're going to cut these out. You're going to tape them or paste them onto the index cards. Don't just cut out the item itself. Cut out the description of the item as well. So, sorry, Elisa. Mm-hmm. So, for example, item 48, the therapist encourages independence of action or opinion in the patient. Don't just cut that out. Cut out also place toward characteristic end if blah, 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 and then place toward uncharacteristic direction if therapist blah, blah, blah. make sure you cut out the entire thing, because when you actually do the cue sorting, you're going to need to rely on not only the item itself, but also on the descriptions of what characteristic and uncharacteristic means. That's very important. Otherwise, your reliability with the group and with the experts is not going to be very high, and it'd be very embarrassing.
So Jessica. The whole description and the item number should go on one side and the other side's blank?
Yes. Okay. Exactly. So that's how you construct your cue sort. Now, for those of you who are going to be doing child cue sorts on your child case, what I handed out to you, everybody got the adult version of this cue sort. And everybody's going to do an adult version for their ideal cue sort. And I'm going to explain all that. But for those, and so then for those of you who have adult patients that you're going to be presenting, you're going to be taking the same deck of cards and using that for your second cue sort. Remember, you're doing ultimately doing two cue sorts for this class. Okay. Those of you doing the child, a child patient, presenting a child patient, are going to be using the second deck of items to cue sort the child, because the adult cue sort deck is not going to be helpful to you in cue sorting a child. So those of you who have child cases are going to need the second deck that I handed out to you, which is the child version of this cue sort. Make sense so far?
I'm a little confused. Does everybody do, you want everyone to do the adult one?
Yes.
First, even if you're doing a child case?
Yes.
So if you're doing a child case, you need both the adult and the child case?
Yes. Okay. Correct, correct, and correct. Sure. Why do you need one?
I think I need an adult one, yeah.
I handed out 15. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 12 people here.
Right, and then we took one more person.
That'd be 14, so there should be one extra. But
I might have an adult one at home.
I will go back to my office and get an extra one.
I might have an adult.
Okay. Yeah. Someone's hoarding the adult cue sort, and I don't know who it is.
Everybody has to stay here until.
Right. Find out who you are. So anyway, okay. So remind me. Remind me, Laura, to get you one. So, now that you know how to construct a cue sort deck, the question then becomes, how do you use it? Okay, so, I handed out, everybody took two of these. Right, two of these, two sheets. Okay.
Same pig, and I was supposed to have one for adult.
Yes.
I don't have the other one.
Okay.
Sorry.
Someone loves
where the adult. Did several people take the Christina and Chris? Is that what happened? Mm-hmm. Like, there's two people.
No, Christina and Alan.
Very strange.
Okay. So, we have this sorting guide. Just ignore the California, there's a different cue sort called the California cue set. Just ignore that. We're going to be using this to record your respective cue sorts. This is the actual coding sheet that we're going to be using. So let me give you a little bit of theory and background on the cue sort, which should help you to actually accomplish the task. We have two members of the class who actually are experts at this, so they can chime in whenever they feel so led. So the cue sort is an instrument which is similar to a Likert scale questionnaire, but it's also a little bit different. In the Likert scale questionnaire, as you're familiar with, each item is ranked on a scale from, let's say, 1 to 5, or 1 to 7, or 1 to 9, based, 1 being very unlikely to 7 being very, very likely. You've all completed Likert scale questionnaires, correct? Okay. Q-sort, a Q-sort instrument is similar in the sense that each item is also rated on a kind of a Likert scale, in this particular case, the scale goes from 1 to 9. 1 being very, or most uncharacteristic of the item being assessed, to 9 being most characteristic of the item being assessed. Okay, so each item is really rated from 1 to 9. Easy, right? Well, it differs, though, from a Likert scale questionnaire in this sense. It is a forced choice distribution. So if you fill out a questionnaire that's Likert scale, let's say it's a 20-item questionnaire, 15 of those items, you, let's say on a scale rating from 1 to 5, 15, 16 of those 20 items, you might rate a 5. And the other 5 items, you might rate a 4. So all your responses are 5s and 4s. Well, if have you guys taken stats yet? Okay, so you would know that it would be very difficult to accomplish any kind of statistical analysis on a questionnaire that's been handed in which all the answers are 4s and 5s on a scale from 1 to 5. Why is that? Can anybody tell me?
Yeah, it's a ceiling, so you don't know what people would have endorsed if they had, say, 1 to 10. There might be a different distribution.
Right, so what kind of distribution would you... Exactly.
Negative, anybody? I remember.
It would be, it's actually a pot, no, you're right, a negative skew, right. So what kind of a distribution would we be looking for?
Normal.
Normal, okay, a normal distribution. So that's what we'd like to have, but unfortunately, with Likert scale type questionnaires, you run the risk of not having a normal distribution once you collect from everybody in your sample. You might have a skewed distribution, or the kurtosis might be screwed up, or, you know, it's just not normal. So, and we all know that a normal distribution looks like this, right? Bell-shaped curve. Okay. What a QSOAR does is it controls for these difficulties with distribution. And it guarantees that every time you complete a QSOAR, you are going to get a normal bell-shaped curve distribution. So you have no problems with skewness or kurtosis. You don't have to perform any kind of transformation on the data and run the risk of messing it up. It's perfect every time. How do you do that? How do we do that? Well, we employ something called forced choice distribution. We force you to place a certain number of items in a pile. You know, each item, or let me put it this way, each rating on, let's say, a 9-point scale distribution, each rating will get a certain number of endorsements. So, for example, I mentioned a 20-item questionnaire where 15 of the items are 5 and the other 5 items are a 4. That's not going to get you a normal distribution. But if we guaranteed that, let's say, the anchor point of 1 is going to get 2 hits, an anchor point of 2 is going to get 3 hits, etc., we can control the distribution so that we have a normal distribution. Well, that's what we do with Q-sorting. So in the Q-sort, only five items can get a rating of 1, and only 5 items can get a rating of 9. All right, so for a rating of 2, 8 items can get a rating of 2, and 8 would get 8. So 8, the rating of 8 would get 8 hits. A rating of 3 gets 12. A rating of 7 gets 12. a rating of 4 gets 16, a rating of 6 gets 16, and a rating of 5, which is the middle pile, right, gets 18 hits. So you have to, you're forced to put 5 items in pile 1, assign it a rating of 1, 8 items, 2, 12 items, a 3, 16 items of 4, 18 items of 5, 16 items of 6, 12 items a 7, 8 items an 8, and 5 items a 9 rating. And you can see this displayed in the handout that I gave you. And what does this look like?
A bell curve.
Right, a bell curve, a normal distribution. So, you guys getting how this works, the Pew sort? So it's similar to a Likert scale, but it's different because you're forced into assigning a certain number of items to each anchor point. Okay? Now, these boxes that you see here, what do you write in those boxes? Okay, what you write in those boxes is the item number. So item 48 might go in pile 7, so you write 48 in the box. That helps you to determine exactly how many items you have in each column. Okay? So, any questions at this point about what you're doing?
Me? I don't like deciding. Like, how do you decide? Like, if you're not sure, like, I don't know. It's just weird to me to have to decide. Like, how do you know which column it is?
Okay, well, there are tricks to it. So, let me just tell you exactly what the assignment is now that you sort of know the mechanics of the queue sorting. So, you have your deck of cards, you have your answer sheet in front of you. Okay, what do you do next? The assignment, at least assignment number one, is according to your theoretical orientation, either psychodynamic or cognitive behavioral. I don't think there's anybody here who's doing interpersonal orientation.
Yeah, well, it's kind of being relational.
No, interpersonal.
What do you do with
integrators?
He's a
different. I don't know, Dave. What do we do?
I'm not sure what the question is.
Right? She's treating her patient from an integrative. We've never had someone like that before.
Well, the first assignment is to do it from, like, ideal psychodynamic or ideal CBT. For an actual session, it might be worth it to do it, you know, separately or have it. You can have the same results.
Yeah, the same results, exactly.
And see which fits better. So student wouldn't have to do it twice, but you could run it through.
Right.
And see what
just
fits
two different
better.
Correlations. Yeah.
Do we have to do? Can we do it like psychodynamic as a model, or does it have to be the model that we're going to use for the CCE? Like the really specific. If we're using that.
It's a general psychodynamic model. These items are not very fine-tuned. There are only 100 items in the entire deck, and they're supposed to cover all aspects of cognitive, behavioral, interpersonal, and psychodynamic process. So if you're looking for a Kleinian, you know, approach, this Q-sort deck is not going to yield, you know, a Kleinian distribution. It's not that fine-tuned. But it will do a very nice job of letting us know whether you know anything about psychodynamic process. Okay? So, for the integrative people, person or people, you know, pick one or the other, cognitive behavioral or psychodynamic, and we'll take it from there for this first assignment. So, you are to take the items, the cards, and put them in this distribution according to what you believe would be the ideal session conducted from your particular theoretical orientation, either psychodynamic or cognitive behavioral.
And this is all adult, right?
All adult.
First one.
All adult. So you take your adult Q sort and you sort the items, and I'll give you some tricks on how to do your Q sort so that it comes out looking great.
This is independent of CCE, so if I did the CCE cognitive behavioral for whatever reason, I can still do with my primary orientation as psychodynamic, I can use that.
I would prefer that you pick the orientation of a patient. Now, except for Kirsten, everybody should have an orientation that they're working in.
Mm-hmm.
You should pick that orientation. Okay. So.
So, I'm sorry. You said that we're going to put the cards in what we believe to be the most ideal.
You are with a patient and you're in the zone. Okay, you are in the zone and you are conjuring up the image of Freud, you know, or whatever. Whoever your psychodynamic guitar hero is. Okay? You're conjuring that person. You're channeling them. You're channeling them. Okay, in this session, and you're coming up with the most incredible session you've ever had. From a psychodynamic point of view, or cognitive behavior, whichever you're choosing, right? What would that session look like?
Is there really such a thing as an ideal session?
Well, there is in your mind. I'm convinced of that. You just have to share that with me through your Q sort.
But you've had a number of different courses from CBT perspective and psychodynamic, and so you kind of put together the commonalities of what people have taught you on this. And there are, even though there's great differences between professors and therapists on what they do, there are pretty strong commonalities. And there's some of these are like really easy. Some are like I would give direct advice, you know, and probably in both you'd put that real low. So it might help you to look over some of the statements and that are going to be in your Q source.
Yeah, I mean, for example,
start thinking about where would I put this.
That's okay.
For example, let me just get an obvious one here. Okay, number 36. Therapist points out patient's use of defensive maneuvers, for example, undoing or denial. Now, if I'm a cognitive behaviorist and I'm Q-sorting, right?
That's an easy one.
You know, I'm not going to put that in a characteristic pile. Just not going to do it. If I did, that would no longer be an ideal session, would it? It'd be an unideal, be less than the ideal.
It'd be integrative.
It might be. You see, so... a lot of these are going to be self-evident. If you've been taking the courses here, you should know. But, you know, as Dave and I have learned from the past couple of years that we've done this, not everybody comes up with an equally ideal session. Everybody's ideals differs. And we want to learn something about that. Okay, and if your ideal comes up a little short, it's important for you to know that so that you can do some crash learning in your preferred theoretical orientation. But what I want to try to do is try to maximize your scores by really telling you how to do this Q sorting in the most efficient way possible so that, you know, you can maximize your score. Okay? Any other questions before I go on? What?
I meant to email you. I emailed Dave yesterday. I have to go.
He just carries that shirt with him everywhere he goes.
Yeah, nice. All right. Well, you know how to do this anyway. No,
that's
so.
All we have for an assignment, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Right. See ya. Yeah.
Go for it.
Go.
Externship interview.
All right. So. Any other questions before I continue? Okay. So what you want to do is you have these items, and then you have in your head, somewhere unconsciously, you have in your head this image of what the ideal session from your theoretical perspective would look like, how it would unfold. Okay. And remember, these items have to do with process, not necessarily content of the session, but how you interact, how the patient interacts. So actually, these items are divided up into three groups, roughly. One third of the items have to do with the therapist's interactions and interventions in the sessions. One third of the items have to do with the patient's interactions and behaviors, attitudes, etc., in the sessions. And then the final third, that's...
Ooh,
oh.
Run.
Oh. Oh my God.
In this beautiful, Armani suit with the sneakers.
Someone had his phone?
Or barefoot.
Or barefoot.
He's gonna run down the road.
He'll go to Elmer.
He forgot his shoes.
So,
and the last, the second third was about patients,
right?
And the third third,
it has to do with the interactions between the therapist and the patient in a session. Okay, now I'll just tell you right off the bat, because you're doing an ideal cue sort, there's no ideal patient, right? So a lot of the patient-focused items are going to tend to go in the middle piles, neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic of your ideal session, right? The items that are really going to matter are going to be the therapist items and the interactional items. Those are the items that are going to really distinguish, you know, the ideal cue sort that you're completing. Right, so the patient-focused items really aren't going to, there's no cognitive behavioral patient or psychodynamic patient. I mean, there might be a little bit, but it's not going to matter that much. So those items are going to tend to go in the middle pile. So that's trick number one. All right. Then, so you have these cards in front of you. How do you go about cue sorting? Well, first shuffle your deck of cards like you're about to play poker. Okay. Laura's very skilled at this. I've seen her. Yeah.
Okay.
Just kidding. So,
can you do, like, think of a card?
She has all these magic tricks.
Yeah, I can recite them. Yeah.
She knows each card by their item number. It's very impressive.
Speaking of item
number.
What's item 20?
Maybe by the end of the dissertation.
No.
So you have these items. So the first step is you go through the items in two passes. All right. The first pass, you're just going to divide the items into three piles. Generally, uncharacteristic of the ideal session in your head, the prototypical session, right? Neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic, or not applicable. Those items go in the middle pile, and then generally characteristic of the ideal session. That's going to go in the characteristic pile, the right pile. So the left pile is going to be general uncharacteristic. Middle pile is going to be neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic, or not applicable. Most of the patient items are going to be not applicable, so they're going to be kind of in the middle piles. And then the third pile, the right pile, is going to be generally characteristic of the ideal session. Okay, another little trick is that when you're going through the first pass, the middle pile should have roughly twice as many items in it as the left and the right piles, roughly. Now, they're all different kinds of strategies. Laura, I think you use a different strategy, right?
I do it differently now, but when I started doing it, I did it that way. I do the three piles, and then each pile gets divided again into three.
Right.
But now I do, the nine at once, because I kind of can eyeball, where, how many.
See, don't try that at home.
But no, I would start that way, by doing the three and then in three. I think that's helpful.
She does that on a closed driving course.
So you're saying that the patient or client items would go in the middle, even for our ideal? Because for me, my ideal would be that I'd have the perfect patient. you know, would understand, or she wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, if I, like, I looked at some of those items, I mean, that would be part
well,
of
Well, okay, so like, patient achieves insight.
Right, I would want that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. But let's say.
But that would go fairly high. But it seems like it would go higher in the psychodynamic than it would be in the cognitive behavioral, whereas the patient reports having reduced the number of cigarettes they smoked would be more likely to go in the higher pile for the CBT.
And let me give you an example of why I say this in general. And don't accept this as a general rule that all the patient items go in the middle pile. I'm not saying that, but just in general, think about that. For example, item 25, Laura?
I don't know the adult one. I don't know the adult one.
Oh, that's right, you don't.
I can't ask any questions about that one.
Patient has difficulty beginning the hour. Well, you could be in a cognitive behavioral treatment, and as a patient, you'd have difficulty beginning. Or if you're in a psychodynamic treatment, you might have difficulty beginning, right? You might be shy, you might be a little quiet, timid, right? So you might have, as a patient, you might have difficulty in either treatment. So that really doesn't characterize a particular model of treatment. If a patient has difficulty beginning an hour, that's neither cognitive behavioral therapy nor is it psychodynamic therapy. It really
Except
has nothing to do.
I would put that in the less characteristic on the CBT because you often start with an agenda and the therapist starts and what would you like to work on today.
Yeah, that's true. Thing.
So,
they might have
because
a slight
of what
difference.
The therapist does.
Yeah.
So you know, you might put one at 6 and the other at 4, so it wouldn't be an extreme.
Yeah.
But
yeah. No, you're right about that. Or 26, patient experiences discomforting or troublesome painful affect. Well, you could be in cognitive behavioral therapy and experience troublesome painful affect, or you could be in psychodynamic therapy and experience troublesome painful affect.
All right, this is a good, because, so what I'm looking for here is because that could go in either camp, I'm putting it in the middle. Because again, when I think ideal, well, that might still be an ideal for me in a therapy session. So I would tend to, you know, if I were thinking,
did they experience
the ideal,
troublesome affect?
For, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
So I want to understand which mindset am I going in with this? Am I trying to divide out between CBT and psychodynamic with this, or am I coming up with my ultimate psychodynamic therapy?
Whatever model you're choosing, that's the model you're Q-sorting for. Okay. So whatever the ideal psychodynamic session is from your perspective, that's what you're Q-sorting for.
Okay.
And I don't know if this helps, but there's some wiggle room like within, you know, the neutral category. So something like that, if you kind of do want a patient to sort of address difficult issues during the hour, but it's not the most characteristic thing, that might go in like the 6 pile. So you're like, it's not completely neutral, but it's not going to be like the most important thing.
Okay.
So I hear that that's sort of what you're saying, but you might want that a little bit.
Yeah, what you're going to find, Cliff, and everybody else is going to find this too, that you're going to have a lot of other items that are going to be a lot more important than that one. Certain therapist items are really going to be what's driving your Q-sort distribution. So really, when you're Q-sorting, you're really rating each item in relation to all the other items. You're rank ordering. You know what ordinal ranking is? Probably heard of that in statistics,
mm-hmm.
Right? It's where someone comes in first place, someone comes in second place, someone comes in third place. You're not measuring the distances between first and second place or second and third place. It could be that, you know, it's a photo finish, and the person who comes in first place in a contest beats out the second place person by 0.02 of a second, but then the difference between second place and third place may be 5 seconds. I'm thinking track and field, but you get the idea, right? So you're not measuring the distance between places, you're just you're ranking them. So you're not taking into account the actual distance between these, but the rankings kind of eliminates the actual distance between subjects or competitors. Right, so in this case, you're rank ordering items. So there are going to be some items that are coming. You're going to come in first place, second place, third place, and that kind of an item patient experiences painful affect, you're going to find it's going to come farther down the rank ordering.
So you might put that, you might really like it when you see it, so you put it in your eighth pile, but it's your eighth one. You get another one 5 minutes later that says, makes interpretation of something, oh, I've got to bump this one out. Which one do I bump out? So,
right, and eventually, my experience and the experience of students doing this ideal Q sort is that ultimately what gets bumped down are these patient-centered items. I don't want to give you too many hints about how to do this assignment, but I thought that was one I would share. Of course, if there's a patient item that you feel is really going to drive your understanding of what an ideal session is, you should put it in one of the more extreme piles. I don't mean to influence unduly the distribution you ultimately come up with. Okay, so you have your three piles. So you've gone through the first pass. All 100 items are now located in one of these three piles. So what's your next step? Well, what I do is, and what Enrico Jones says you do in the instructions at the beginning of your the appendix I gave you, this comes from a 2000 book by Enrico Jones. What he suggests you do, and what other purveyors of Q-sort methodology suggest you do, is you take the left pile then, and then Q-sort that in turn for piles 1, 2, and 3. Now, it's possible. Now, how many items do you have in piles 1, 2, and 3? Well, 8 plus 12 is 20, plus 5 is 25. So you've got 25 items here. In piles 4, 5, and 6, you've got 16 plus 18 plus 16, that's 50 items. And in piles 7, 8, and 9, you've got, again, 12 plus 8 plus 5 is 25 items. So that's why I said that roughly you should have twice as many items in the middle, in your middle pile, as you should in the outer piles, the left and right piles. But it's not going to work out that way exactly, because you're not going to be counting cards unless you're in Las Vegas trying to make some money in poker. You're not going to be counting cards. You want to have roughly twice as many, but it's not always going to work out that way because you're not thinking about how many cards are going in the piles. You're just concentrating on reading the item, reading the characteristic and uncharacteristic descriptors, and figuring out whether this is generally uncharacteristic, generally characteristic, or neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic or not applicable. Once you do that, you take the left pile, and then you've got to divide this left pile into three piles, piles 1, 2, and 3. Pile 1 is most uncharacteristic, pile 2 is almost most uncharacteristic, and pile 3 is just uncharacteristic. What you've got to do now is to pick out the five items that are most uncharacteristic of your ideal Q sort. Most uncharacteristic of that ideal psychotherapy session from your theoretical orientation. Put them in pile 1. Take those five items, put them in pile 1. Then pick out the 8 next most uncharacteristic items. Put them in pile 2. And then the 12 next most uncharacteristic items, put those in pile 3. Now, let's say that you had more than 25 items in this left pile. Okay, well then, you got to bump some of those items, that spillage, over into the middle piles. Okay, let's say that you end up with fewer than 25 items in the left pile. Okay, well then, when you ultimately get to sorting the middle pile, you're going to have to take some items and bump them down into pile 3 of your left pile. So there's going to be some adjusting that you're going to have to do, because it's going to be very rare. It's very rare that that whoever is doing the Q sorting is going to end up with exactly 25 items in their left pile. It almost never happens. So you're going to have to make some adjustment, either borrowing some items from the middle pile or throwing some items into the middle pile. Again, it's forced choice. You're forced to do this. All right, it's a gun to your head. All right, so then once you do that with the left pile, go to the right pile. Same thing. You start with choosing the five most characteristic items of your ideal psychotherapy session from your perspective, theoretical perspective. Pick those five items. All right, then go and pick the next eight items. Very characteristic, but not most characteristic. Pick those eight items, and then pick 12 items that are characteristic of the session. Again, if you have too many items in the right pile, maybe you have 27, maybe you have 30, that spillage is going to have to go and help construct pile 6 of your middle pile. What if you have too few items? Well, you're going to have to borrow some items from the middle pile to make up your pile 7 of your distribution. Okay, once you've done that, then you go to the middle pile with roughly 50 items. Half your distribution should be in the middle pile. 16 items should be in pile 4. 16 items should be in pile 6. What's pile 4 and pile 6 mean? Pile 4 is just slightly uncharacteristic. It's basically a neutral pile, but it's slightly uncharacteristic. Pile 6, again, neutral, but slightly characteristic of your ideal session, just slightly. And then pile 5 is completely neutral. Neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic, could be just not applicable. They go into pile 5. That actually has the most number of items of all the piles, 18 items. So then if you need to steal some items from the middle piles here, make sure you pick out some items from pile 4 that should go into pile 3. Or if you have to push over some items from the left pile into the middle piles, make sure they go into pile 4. You just have to play with it until you get the exact distribution that we're requiring. Another little trick is when you're doing the actual sorting of the left pile, the right pile, and the middle pile, it's good to stagger the items. Don't just put them on top of each other, because you're going to want to refer to them and look at them. So kind of stagger them so maybe half the item is showing. Does that make sense?
I don't know what you're talking about now.
You know what I'm talking
stagger
about?
Stagger them, like, so a card. If you want to pick a card, you can see a little bit of each card.
I see. So you can look at them more easily.
Exactly. Because if you have them just stacked on top of each
you
other.
Have to go through them all.
Exactly. So you want to, like, fan them out and look at them so that you know where a particular item is, and you can see and say, well, you know, maybe it doesn't belong in that pile. Maybe it belongs in the pile next door. So that you can easily, you don't do it that way?
She's so good now. She doesn't.
No, I never knew that tip. You never gave me that one.
Oh.
You know, we come up with more tips as we go along. I think the one about sort of the more child content focused items being generally more neutral is from when I was Q sorting. I found that was more helpful, and so
yeah,
you find more suggestions along the way.
All right. So, what do you think?
Who
cares, right?
No, I'm just curious. There must be a reason why we're like being, you know, like I could understand why the first, you know, the top 25 makes sense, but like what are we hoping to gain from the information?
Okay. Well, I'll answer that question, but I just want to, that's a segue into the next part of my talk. I wanted to hear anybody else have any questions about the mechanics of Q sorting. Clear as mud. All right, so, and if you have any questions as you're doing this next week, email me, we'll work it out. Gina.
I just, not about how to actually do it, but once it's done, how do you then know if it's the correlation, I guess, is to the ideals that you have?
Well, that's basically Shira's question. I'm gonna address that.
I assume if you have an item and you just can't tell whether it's a 4 or 5, it's exactly the same in your mind, then you put it with the one that needs it.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, you're not going to be able to make fine-grained discriminations between some items. It's just not going to happen. And so you're just going to fill in the holes.
Okay.
Do the best you can,
sure.
But, I mean...
If push comes to shove, it's not unethical when you say, I just can't.
No, no, of course not. I mean, okay. Even Laura probably does that.
Oh, yeah. I have another tip.
Yes, please.
Okay, another tip that's helpful is to really read the descriptors, especially the descriptor I find for uncharacteristic, because sometimes you might think it, you would put it in a more neutral pile, but if you read the descriptor, actually it says, like, if this is not present in the session, you know, put it in an uncharacteristic pile. So sometimes those can help you choose between neutral and uncharacteristic if you're sort of on the fence. But yeah, really, the descriptors are really helpful. They give really specific examples.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the descriptors you have to cut out with the item. Remember, mm-hmm. I said at the beginning, you got to cut out not only the item, but the descriptors, the characteristic, and paste those onto your index cards. You have to read those, otherwise you're really going to be kind of lost. Because they really define the item. It's very hard to know what the author is getting at with each of the items if you don't read those descriptors. And then you're not going to be able to know really definitively what pile it goes into. And then your distribution is going to be screwed up and it's going to be low in comparison with the experts, which we'll get to. We want everybody to do well on this assignment. So doing well constitutes you reading the descriptors and really knowing what the item is standing for. Because if you don't, it's going to get messed up. So, all right, so that's the mechanics. Now, once you do this and you write all your item numbers on the sheet that I've given to you, the next step is to send this to me. And the way we've been doing this, and it works very well, not only for my research coding teams, but also for this class, is that you will send me the distribution either in Excel or SPSS. If you don't have SPSS, that's fine. I can work with that. But everybody, I think, has at least Excel, right? Mm-hmm. And you know how to use Excel, at least rudimentarily, right? Okay. So, what you would do is, the rows in your database, your Excel or SPSS database, go like this, right? And so you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These are the case numbers. Correct? Okay. Each of the case numbers is going to represent an item number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay? So corresponding to each of the case numbers, you're gonna enter the pile number. So item one, what you're gonna do is you're gonna look in your coding sheet. Okay, pile one, where's one? Oh, it's in pile 6. So you're gonna type in, you're gonna enter in a new variable here, you can call it whatever you want. You're gonna enter a 6. Then you're going to look for item 2. Okay, where's item 2? Oh, that was in pile 8. So you're going to enter 8. Okay, item 3. Okay, that was in pile 5. So you're going to enter 5, etc. Okay, now another little trick that will help you, especially with this part of the assignment, is when you write in your items for each pile, if you could write in the items in chronological, numerical order. Okay, so maybe this first pile here, you had item 18, item 32, item 1, item 92, and item 54. Rather than writing it down like that, it would be easier for you, and it's not going to matter as far as the actual calculation of your ideal distribution, but it's going to be easier for you, I think, in doing this assignment. If you write down in your little boxes here, 1, 18, 32, 54, 92, hype. That'll be easier for you, because then when you're going through and doing this for me, it's going to be, just trust me, it's going to be easier for you to find, to locate the item numbers and where they are in each of these 9 piles. So just another little trick. Otherwise, it's just going to take longer, but it's not going to affect the accuracy of your distribution. Jessica.
So you're saying, like, let's say in section 1, I had card numbers 18, 34, whatever. I'm just running, I go on to the left and find 18, and then press 1, and then go down to 34. You can do it that way, too.
Or you could do it the way that you search your sheet as you go down the column.
You're saying you do the item number itself first.
The item numbers are automatic. I mean, each row represents an item number.
Right.
Okay, so 1 to 100, yeah, okay. And then each item is going to have a corresponding pile number.
Right.
You just scroll up and down on your computer screen.
Is what you're saying.
Right.
Exactly.
Like this, yeah.
That's fine.
Here's right
here along the side. If you make one of the columns the item numbers.
Yeah.
You could enter them in as you see them and then have Excel sort it for you, which would be a lot quicker. In other words, I could type in column 1, then column 2, column 3, and then I just sort it.
You can do that. I didn't want to complicate matters. But
that's what I had written.
No,
what
I thought that was work. We only came up with that like 3 weeks ago.
I had written that, so you have 10. I had written the first column was 1 to 9, then I was going to stick the numbers in ascending numerical order. That's okay.
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
Just so... You send to me something that looks like this.
Wait, can we just scan it onto the computer? Like a PDF? Or no? No. Oh, because
then he would have to enter.
Oh, you're actually doing calculations with those numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
You're going to compare us like you did in your article?
Are you going to announce to the whole group, though?
Yes, we're going to publicly humiliate all of you.
Great.
It'll be in the first one.
So the grip would be the participant observer.
So the alumni
can see your time. Great quarter you on the board.
What we do is we preserve everyone's self-esteem and narcissism by me taking each of your distributions and labeling it with a label that only I know what it means.
So do we ever find out how close we are?
And then what happens is then after class or even during class, if you want to know, come up to me and I'll tell you which distribution you were.
Okay.
All right. So everybody understand what you're doing? You're putting your responses into this format and you're emailing the attachment to me.
Did you like that?
Well, there are 14 of you, so... Probably by Monday evening, at the latest. That'll give me enough time.
How do you want to have them indicate Sucker and I make their CBT?
Just put it in the in their email message, whether it's Sucker and I make their CBT. But it should be, as I said to Alan, it should be corresponding to the patient that you're going to be Q-sorting ultimately. I mean, like for Kirsten, is it more CBT or more psychodynamic? I mean, you probably would need to make a determination whether it leans more one way or the other, and then pick that theoretical orientation to Q-sort from. All right. So, then you send that to me, and then what do I do with the distribution? So I'll have 14 or whatever distributions. What I do is then I copy and paste them into a master file and I relabel each distribution by a code, I label it by a code so that when I print it out and give it to all of you, or I could even email you the output, you won't know whose distributions are whose, right? It'll just be labeled with a code. And then in class, you can ask me, well, which one was mine? So that's how we do it. Now, what am I actually doing? What calculations am I performing with all of your distributions? Well, there are going to be several. there's a psychodynamic prototype and a cognitive behavioral prototype. There's also an interpersonal prototype, but I don't think anybody here is doing interpersonal. I know relational, but that's considered psychodynamic. Interpersonal is something different.
I think Dr. Kuzma is interpersonal.
But did he supervise the case from an interpersonal, an IPT perspective? Did he use the Myrna Weissman manual?
No, he used Saffron.
Was it?
Jeremy Saffron. It was one article that Jeremy Saffron wrote.
Working with enactments.
Okay, but does Saffron call it interpersonal or does he call it psychodynamic?
Psychodynamic.
All right, so it's psychodynamic. So I'm not going to use the interpersonal prototype, but there isn't, just for people's information, there's an IPT prototype as well.
What's the difference between that prototype and the psychodynamic one?
Actually, a lot. The correlation between the IPT and the psychodynamic is lower than the correlation between the IPT and the cognitive behavioral.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very interesting. So,
because so much of it happens with material in the session, and behavioral people like to find anything you can directly observe also. So that's where I think it comes from.
Yeah. And also, IPT is very directive, as is cognitive behavioral, so they have that in common as well. It's not a non-directive treatment. So these three prototypes were developed by Stuart Ablon at Harvard with Enrico Jones, who's now deceased, but he was at Berkeley. And these two researchers collected, I think it was 11 psychodynamic prototypes, 10 cognitive behavior prototypes, and I think 10 IPT prototypes. What they did was they contacted world-renowned experts in each of these three orientations, the big names, huge names. I think Dave Roll was one for cognitive behavior. And I was one for psychodynamic, yeah. No, these are like the huge, like, I know Mike Embaum was one of them for the cognitive behavioral, so like the big names.
Barlow, probably.
Probably Barlow. The names have been shrouded in secrecy, but I did get Stuart Ablon to tell me about Mike Embaum. So, so these experts were asked to do the very same thing that I'm asking you to do. All right? And what Ablon and Jones did was, they had these experts send them their Q-sort distributions, just like I'm asking you to do. And what they did was they composited them. They added them up. So there were 11 experts in the psychodynamic orientation. They added them up. They added their distributions up, divided by 11. I mean, this isn't rocket science, right? And they came up with a master composite, prototypical psychodynamic Q-sort. Did the same thing with the cognitive behavioral, same thing with the IPT. So Stuart Ablon was kind enough to send me these three prototypes, and I have them. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be taking all of your distributions that you send me, and I'm going to be correlating them with each of the three prototypes. And we're going to see exactly whether your perceptions of an ideal psychotherapy session from your perspective lines up with, corresponds with, correlates with one of these three prototypes. And the goal would be that you would be highly correlated, let's say you're doing a psychodynamic ideal Q-sort, that you'd be highly correlated with the psychodynamic prototype, correlated around zero with the cognitive behavioral prototype, and also zero with the IPT prototype. Conversely, if you're doing cognitive behavioral, we want to see a very high adherence to the cognitive behavioral prototype, low adherence to psychodynamic, and low adherence to IPT. For integrative, it might be interesting. Maybe the ideal for you would to be relatively or moderately highly correlated with both of these Q sorts. I don't know how that's going to turn out.
And did they report the inter rater reliability within the experts?
Is yes. High? Both of these, all three of these actually were quite high. It was higher than 0.8. So the alphas were higher than 0.8. Yeah. So actually, Kirsten, if you're, I think for this assignment, you should just pick one orientation and try to Q sort for that. Don't you agree?
Yeah. But then for your actual session, it may be, right, as Jeff pointed out, it might be in between.
Yeah. I mean, for the then your second assignment is you're going to be Q sorting, not for any ideal, but an actual session that you completed with a patient you're going to be presenting. And then I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to Q-sort that actual session with these prototypes and see where you fall. And then that's when you, Kirsten, might find that your session is going to straddle both of these.
Or maybe even look at
it. It might. But we can actually assess that. And you have an adult case, right?
17.
Yeah, so that's considered adult. So. Now, for those of you who have child...
In between all that dimension also.
Yeah.
I like to be problems.
So those of you doing child cases, you're going to be switching and using the other Q-sort that I handed out and Q-sorting for your child case using that other Q... I mean, the other Q-sort is, you know, patterned after the adult Q-sort, except the items have been modified to accommodate what you would do in a child therapy.
And there's also
there are child prototypes.
Behavioral,
yes,
comparison.
Yes. Now we don't have child IPT, but we do have a child cognitive behavioral prototype and a child psychodynamic prototype. Yes.
I was gonna ask if you're gonna listen to the session that we're doing.
No,
the
I'm not gonna listen to the session.
And the other one was that's
maybe
gonna
be 14 sessions to
listen. 14 hours to just
go. Yeah. Why not? I got no life.
And that would be the one session that we would be choosing for our CCE?
Not necessarily. What we've seen in the past is that I give back the results, the output of the calculations, the correlations, right? And occasionally what we found is that a student who has Q-sorted a session that's, let's say, cognitive behavioral, they find out that it's really more highly correlated with psychodynamic model. In that case, or vice versa, right? You're psychodynamic, but the Q sort suggests that you really were doing cognitive behavioral process, not psychodynamic. In those cases, the student has reconsidered that particular session as a model for what they were doing. It would make sense to choose that work sample, present it to your CCE panel, and then have the CCE panel tear it up because you're not really doing psychodynamic, you're doing cognitive behavioral work. So what the hell are you doing presenting a cognitive behavioral case or cognitive behavioral work when you're supposed to be doing psychodynamic work? It doesn't make any sense. So it has resulted in some students rethinking which session they should choose for their work sample. So it's actually for your benefit. I mean, We're trying to help you guys choose a session that actually patterns something that you're saying that you're doing.
Got it.
It's like a matrix that we'll get at the end of the course that shows where all the numbers should be for each one.
No, that's a carefully guarded secret.
Oh.
But you will get is, you'll get both Dave's and my prototypes, and we'll correlate you with us. So Dave did a cognitive behavioral ideal Q-sort, and I did a psychodynamic Q-sort, and we'll also correlate the entire class to Dave and me. So if you're interested in seeing what my ideal would be for psychodynamic, I could certainly reveal that. I just can't reveal the ideal prototypes from the experts.
So I did a lot of fretting about the outcome because it's public knowledge. I had like a low correlation. This is not good.
Dave did great. I did fine. So.
So for adolescents, is it kind of like as soon as you're doing talk therapy and it's not play, then you're really doing adults?
Yeah, I think if you are treating an adolescent and they're sitting in a chair,
right,
and they're talking to you, I mean, that's basically the adult.
Okay.
Yeah. If they're not playing chess with you or playing board games, if they're just sitting in a chair and talking with you like you and I are talking right now, that would lend itself better, I think, to the adult version, the PQS, rather than the CPQ.
And also on the CBT, with the children, it's really more behavior analytic, and setting up contingencies and practicing and role-playing and that kind of thing, whereas the adult is more CBT of, you know, looking at the cognitive distortions and that kind of
it's
thing.
It's just, so like, I find with, like a 15-year-old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing sort of both, because sometimes pressing the cognitive, they're just not quite there,
right,
and so then it turns more behavioral, you know? So I'm just wondering if, like, this is sensitive enough to pick up those nuances, because I feel like adolescence is such a in-betweeny type of, you know, situation. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess...
Well, there are both behavioral and cognitive... focused items in here, and they both load onto the cognitive behavioral prototype. But we don't have like a separate behavioral prototype and then a cognitive behavioral or a cognitive prototype. It's all
CPT.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's not designed to like identify specific, like a Kleinian model or an Anna Freudian model or a Mahlerian model or a Mike and Baum model or whatever. It's not designed to do that. It's designed
versus
to...
versus Ellis.
Yeah, versus Ellis, right. It's designed to just identify a more general approach. Now, I did use this Q-sort to try to make distinctions between transference-focused psychotherapy and dialectical behavior therapy and their relationships with their parent therapies. DBT with CBT and TFP with psychodynamic, and I did find some interesting results which are going to be published, but DBT actually has some psychodynamic elements in it.
I definitely can see that.
But the TFP doesn't have cognitive behavioral elements. It's a pretty psychodynamically oriented treatment for borderlines, but the DBT had some psychodynamic elements in it. So it was a hybrid, it's really a hybrid between psychodynamic and CBT. So there are some really exciting things that you can do with this kind of methodology which are really fascinating. But in general, these items are not designed to pick up real fine-grained discriminations among specific treatment manuals. It's not generally used for that purpose. I wanted to see whether I could do it, and it did yield some interesting findings, but in general it wasn't designed for that purpose. I see the look of the tiger in your eyes. You want to just get into it. Yes. Dive right into it. Tear that cue sort of apart.
I want to tear these papers right now just to like get started on that. But that would be the
I feel the energy in the room. So any other questions about sorting 101?
Does like the winner get a prize?
Well, we hadn't done that in the past. We didn't want to reveal anyone's identities.
Okay.
But it does yield specific correlations, you know. And
once people found out they did right, all right, they started letting it be known who they were.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then the people who didn't want to say anything, you know, you kind of knew they didn't do so.
Oh,
well.
<no.
laughs>
So. Right. People who work with you see the ideal. Don't they know the ideal?
What's that?
The people who work with you, like as supervisees, don't
they've never seen the ideal.
Oh, it's not. I thought that was. So we don't get to see the ideal after.
No, you. I mean, I tell you what your correlation was, but I don't. I never revealed the ideal Q-sort distribution.
Oh, okay.
Cliff asked for that. That remains a carefully guarded secret.
Oh, why? So if we become Q-sort masters, do we get to see it then?
No.
So
it's not supposed to be. It's not.
We never get to
know it. Wait a minute. So who, how did you get access to this, like, secret?
Stuart Ablon sent them to me.
Like, in order to do research with it, you would need...
You have to have it. If you're doing research.
I think those Rorschach cards. Theoretically,
if I switched my dissertation to an accuser, I would get to see this insight. Probably not, though. I mean,
what?
You probably still guard the ideal. Like, does Linnae know the ideal?
No.
You probably do the stuff. Oh. So, no. I mean, it really is a secret, I guess, so because you contaminate data all over the place.
This is like the curious case.
Really? Well,
just like are you getting younger and younger?
This is just like it.
What's that?
What does the other 75 parts let us know?
Well, it's not just the characteristic items that drive the knowledge base here. It's the uncharacteristic items too. They are just as important. So it's all the items tell us something, right? Even the items that don't mean anything, that tells us something.
Yeah, it's like one of the questions was asking about, like, are you talking about money and fees and sort of kind of frame questions? And if that's like the most characteristic, like, you know, like that would probably be something you don't want to spend 100% of your time talking about every session. So it'd be good to know.
Right, it probably wouldn't take up a whole lot of the session, of the ideal session, you wouldn't be spending your time. The ideal session is talking about when we're meeting next. It's just, that's not going to be a very effective therapy session. So the uncharacteristic items, it's very important to grasp this piece of information. The uncharacteristic items are just as important as the characteristic items. They're just as important. I mean, telling me what your ideal therapy session is not is just as important and just as definitive as telling me what it is. I mean, you can tell me what it is, but that doesn't tell me what it's not. I need to know also what it's not.
Are you going to take this information and use it constructively
against
with
you?
Us? No, not against, but for.
Well,
that's
what I was
teaching.
Saying. I was just saying that if you, let's say you're doing a psychodynamic case, and it turns out that you're very highly correlated with the cognitive behavioral prototype and not correlated at all with the psychodynamic prototype, I'm going to pull you aside and say, you know, you better think about a different work sample.
Or if you're highly correlated with your theoretical orientation, it will give you much more confidence that you know how to talk about your conceptualization in a helpful way.
Right. And if you're, we haven't had this really, but if you're Q-sorting for an ideal psychodynamic, for example, and it turns out that your Q-sort is highly correlated with cognitive behavioral, you know, it would give you pause to start reading up on psychodynamic process and vice versa. So generally, though, what we found is that students have done very well on the ideal part, that you guys basically know psychodynamic process, if that's your orientation, or cognitive behavioral process, if that's your orientation. That hasn't been the problem. The problem has been going to the work sample and Q-sorting that. That's where we've encountered some real major problems with certain students. So I don't have any worries or concerns about this first assignment, but it's just a good thing to go through. You get some practice with Q-sorting, and also just helps to confirm in your mind that you actually know the orientation that you're treating your patient in.
Also, since almost all of you are doing cases from last year, when you didn't, especially if you're psychodynamic, you didn't really know what you were doing until pretty late in the semester. So, you know, what we can do is help you figure out how to say, you know, here's what I knew then and here's what I've learned since then. That's all people are looking about. People understand where you are, and actually I have people in their cover letters to their panel members tell, you know, I'm now near the end of the third year program. This client was my first client when I was in the second year, and sort of set them up for understanding where you are and what you'll be talking about. People are understanding. It's meant to be and generally is a collegial process. Mm-hmm.
Would you consider correlating us with psychodynamic and interpersonal? Because I'm looking over these cards and I feel like
I'm going to get smacked for things like disclosure when I'm supposed to be talking about my feelings in session because I'm working relationally.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to correlate everybody with all three prototypes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm going to do that.
Oh,
but,
okay, cool.
But I really think you should really try your best to focus your ideal session on one of these three prototypes, and preferably the one that you use to treat your patient with. Now, one or two items, like the disclosure item, isn't going to throw off the entire correlation. I mean, you have 100 items you're Q-sorting. One errant item is not going to obliterate a good correlation. It's just not going to happen. But enough items eventually will lower your correlation with something.
But on your ideal, you would probably put that in the right spot.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but several of you, because you're using more integrated or interpersonal, might appropriately vary from the experts in the different camps, and so it'll just be able to talk about it so that you'll be able to say what that means with regard to your own intervention.
Because I'm working psychodynamically, but every now and then, like, I'll do something a little CBT, and my supervisor loves it, and she even suggests things sometimes.
She differentially reinforces that?
Yeah. She should point out this, or she should let me know this. You know, so it's kind of like, being reinforced for it.
Well, then, your work sample Q-sort is going to be a mixture. You might have moderately high correlations with both CBT and psychodynamic, but for this first assignment, the ideal, just do a pure, if it's psychodynamic, do a pure psychodynamic. Any other questions or comments? Again, you can email me if things come up while you're doing the Q-sorting and get back to you really quickly about it. Okay.
Thanks. Any externship questions or problems? Just one comment. You guys have all been through this before, but it is fine if you don't hear from people you want to hear from in a reasonable period of time, like at the end of this week, if they're saying get stuff in as soon as you can after January 15th, to call or email or sometime. You know, this is not a time to sit back and wait or to worry about nudging people. Be assertive. Okay. He's good.
Be assertive.